Welcome to the 4Jack Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Season 6 of the 4Jack Podcast. This episode is powered by our good friends over at Galvin Green. Galvin Green is the number one technical golf apparel brand preferred on every professional tour. They're famous for designing high-tech, elevated golf apparel for every golfer, male or female, to feel invincible under all conditions. Now that we're well on our way into fall ball weather here in Canada and the northern parts of the United States, you should definitely think about pursuing galvingreen.com to get your apparel game dialed in for the fall season. A massive thank you to our community that continues to support and share in our success throughout Season 6. You can expect more untold stories, more amazing guests, and a deeper dive into how golf truly impacts, connects, and is celebrated by many. It's fitting that I'm dropping a line from a previous guest on our show that goes a little something like this. I am literally so excited for this interview, I put on extra cologne for the occasion. If that's not podcast humor, I don't know what is. And before I subject you to any more of my terrible jokes, we're going to head down to warmer climates so my co-host can save us all. Mr. Derek Lane, what's happening in SoCal today?
Well, Parksy, after some technical difficulties, frantically feeling like I dropped the ball, which I just loathe, we sit here, and the great thing about it is our guest is not very far from me, so we're both kind of experiencing the same part of that SoCal love that you miss so much up there above the border, but we'll get through it. I was texting with Train today just because I told him that the Velvet Voice himself was coming on, so Train texted back with a couple of things I can't say on a podcast. They were so vulgar and wrong, which makes me know that the love is real, but as you know, we've talked a lot about a lot, right? We've done a lot of things here on the podcast. We've had a lot of fun people on, but the one that I've been chasing, the elusive one, that big unicorn in the sky, we finally got 34 minutes and 32 seconds left to go because his time is so valuable. But that being said, I haven't seen him much at the club, which means football is on and I know what he's doing. And we were talking earlier today. I just can't get enough of the Kevin Burkhardt, Greg Olson partnership, right? I think it's the best there is out there. And not only that, but we're going into World Series time. Baseball starts here in the States. So if we didn't get him tonight, I think we got him in 2025. So God bless the fact that he came on tonight.
Yeah, I mean, this is a special one. But before I'm going to even pass you the microphone, Kevin, I'm going to say we're graciously joined tonight by a sportscasting legend in the making. On any given day, as Derek alluded to, he's rubbing shoulders with names like Jeter, Big Poppy, A-Rod, and D-Train. With a captivating play-by-play call and a studio presence almost as enchanting as Travis Kelce's new girlfriend. The voice of NFL on Fox and MLB Fox in Studio, please welcome to the show our friend, Mr. Kevin Burkhardt.
I mean, I don't know how to live up to that. That's like the biggest intro I've ever had in my entire life. I feel like the expectation is here, and this podcast interview will be like way down here. Boys, it's great to be with you. Certainly listen enough and yeah, it's just good to be on and shoot the breeze with you boys.
We had to level it up tonight. And I guess I'm going to start this off real hot. So first question of the evening, and likely the most important one of the day. Since calling the Chiefs game, would you now consider yourself a Swiftie, Kevin?
Hey, you know what? I like Taylor Swift. I'm the only one in America that hasn't seen her show, by the way. I think I'm officially the only person in the country that hasn't seen her show. But I love Taylor Swift, but I thought the whole thing was, I thought it was cool for this reason, right? Like, obviously there's a cultural icon of the game, which is news no matter what, but she could have just been in the back of the suite chilling and with a hat on and, you know, sipping water. She was at the front of the suite, pounding the glass, shouting, let's go, chest bumping her friends. Like, I'm like, this is cool as shit, because like, it's like any of us would be at the game, like freaking out, like over the game and over Kelce scoring. So to me, that's what made the whole thing. It wasn't just that she was there. She was just like, she was in it. Like, I just thought that was the coolest thing ever.
I hate to keep going on this, but like, did you guys know she was coming to the game? Like, what was the vibe like? I mean, overall, it must've been pretty exciting energy.
Yeah, not till day of. We honestly all didn't, that's all been talked about. And we all didn't think she was actually going to come to the game. And then a couple hours before the game, we were tipped off. And obviously, she's got her security scouting out the place. And we're like, oh, wow, she's actually going to come to the game. And then Aaron Andrews and Greg Olson were talking to Kelce at the time. And we all kind of got a text. And they're like, is she really coming? And he's like, yeah. And we're like, all right.
It's going down.
So we didn't know like how it was going to work or she's going to go down the field, but she just kind of snuck into his suite and she was there the whole game. Just, you know, I mean, we showed her a few times and even when we didn't show her, she was going nuts, like watching the game. It was cool. It was fun. It was good. Good thing she was there because the game we had sucked. The Chiefs won like, you know, by a million. So it gave us something fun to do.
Well, it was so bad that they cut right in LA. They went to a different game. And I'm like, that's like the meanest thing you could have done to me right now. It's like, yeah. I listened to Katie and Greg more than I watched the game. And it's like, it was such a horrible game. They actually cut away from it in this market. And it's hilarious because everybody, you know, there's always two groups. There's haters. And then there's people like Kevin, right? And you understand what it's like to not, like, I haven't seen Taylor Swift either, but why would it bother so many people? Like the amount of memes and TikToks that are just, they're so angry that somebody like this came into their game. And the best part is that it's going to give the Kelce Brothers podcast, which by the way, is one of the best podcasts out there. They are amazing. Like they're everything that McAfee wants to be, in my personal opinion. They are unbelievably hilarious. And when they brought his brother's wife on, his sister-in-law, like she was out of this world. Like she wanted no part of it, right? Like she's the complete converse to Taylor Swift. And it's like, if you listen to their podcast, they're so brutally honest. Like I'm hoping that all the traffic goes to KB's game and then to that podcast because they're hilarious.
They're great guys. You would love them. I mean, they're just like they are on the podcast. And I don't know if you guys saw the Kelce documentary on Amazon. It's worth your time. Yes. It's really, really good. Just a good insight in. But like what you get on that podcast, D, like you're talking about, that's who they are. They're just good dudes. They're fun. They're guys you want to have a drink with, right? Like that's kind of who they are. So I think if you got no time for it, like, okay, then go do something else. I think it's cool. I mean, why not? Like it doesn't hurt. And hopefully, you know, like she was at the Jet game and it was actually a close game. So maybe like every game won't be 41-0 that she's at. So there's that.
Well, and right, Parksy, and the other part is too, it's like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of you, KB. It's like where you started, what you were doing, and now where you are. It's very similar with Jason, right? Like what people are going to find out Travis's backstory, but like that family and that whole part of it, it's like those guys, like I just love Jason because like the amount of work that guy puts in looking like me, like he doesn't look like everybody else. Like when he's walking around, he had no shirt on. I'm like, I don't feel so bad. That guy's a professional athlete and a Super Bowl champion. I have a little bit of hope in this world. And this guy's just bulldozing people and a pulling center and he's around the end. And then in, like you said, the Amazon doc, not to go off, that's a wonderful portrayal of not only him, but families. That's how it should be done. And I love the fact that he's so loyal to his younger brother and he took so much of the time to make sure and vouch for him. And now obviously the rest is history. So it's a pretty great story. And it reminds me a little bit about the Flushing Kevin Burkhardt that we're going to get into here in a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the cool part is like a lot, you know, like obviously there's different levels of sports fan, right? And we talked to them all, but I think, you know, I think sometimes you forget these guys are just people, right? Like they're just like you and I, and they have life at home and whatever that is, and whether they have a family or not, and they have a backstory, and they just have a different job. That's really what it comes down to. So like, that's what I love about my job is I get to see the people. That's why it's so cool that you guys have become close with Train, because I covered him as a player and knew him way back in the day. You know, now that I get to work with him and you see like what he is as a person, like that to me is such a cool part of the thing that I do.
Yeah, it's what we have here is it's been such a journey, but at the same capacity, it's this unique platform that sort of levels everybody. And golf is this weird sort of ecosystem that brings all these pieces together. And it's fun to understand how golf impacts people and how it brings them together and sort of a world it's opened them up to that they might not necessarily have access to or want access to or even engage in outside of this sort of brotherhood and sisterhood. So very, very cool. And on that note, let's time travel a little bit, Kevin. Let's take it back. Let's talk about your introduction to the game and sort of who was instrumental in that process.
You know, it's funny. I never played golf growing up at all. It was not in my family. I grew up in New Jersey and no one played it in my family and never played it, never paid attention to it, never watched it. And then when I got out of college, a couple friends who played. So I went out, you know, a couple times a year. I had no idea what I was doing, like literally none. But I had a, you know, one friend who played and at least taught me like the basic etiquette and things like that, like the important things to know, because I had no idea. And so I liked it, but I played, I don't know, twice a year, right? And was nothing that I ever got into until I moved to California. You know, I've been out in LA for 10 years. And, you know, I was like, well, it is 75 and sunny every single day. Maybe I should give, you know, go back and try golf again. It, you know, I mean, it's December and 68 degrees. Maybe I'll go play golf, you know? And so I just kind of went back to it and started, you know, grabbing some friends and hacking it around, and I enjoyed it. And then, you know, then I started like really getting into it, like really paying attention to it and watching all the time and reading up on it and like really diving into the sport. Whereas, you know, all the sports that I watched on my couch on the weekend, I was now watching golf. Well, I'm working most weekends, but the ones that I was off, you know, I would watch, and I never did that as a kid. And so it was just a different experience for me. And I just really developed a love for the game. And then, you know, I met with Derek and belonged to, you know, Rolling Hills, and I started really playing and taking a couple lessons. And it became like my serenity. Like, I don't get angry. I don't cuss. I don't like lose sleep if I have a bad round. I just love being outside and having a couple good holes and walking the course. It's just like, it's a stress reliever for me. So it became this thing that I became really obsessed with and just love. And it's become like my, not only my hobby, but like really, it really is like my, you know, serenity. It's like, okay, take a deep breath. Don't look at my phone, no work, hit a couple good shots and then go back into the real world. That's what it's become. So I didn't really get into it, honestly, until, I don't know, 8 years ago, and really, really into it about like 4 or 5 years ago.
I think it's one of those cool things where, especially a person sort of at your level of, if you want to call it stardom, celebrity status, you're in the media's eye. You're having to be on a lot of the time. I mean, being out in public, being in front of the camera, you know, talking sports, that's kind of your job, right? You got to be that guy all the time. But maybe the golf course is the place where you can just turn it off and have a laugh and hang out with some buddies and shoot the shit and just keep it real. I mean, it's one of those cool places where you can turn everything off. Like you said, it's that serene spot. But I got to say, playing with guys like D-Train, B-Fresh, and those guys, that's got to be tough sometimes.
Well, you know, D's got to deal with me. He's got to deal with my suckiness to kind of walk around and deal with that. We have a couple laughs, and but I like, he knows, like, we've played, like, there's no stress. Like, it's just I love the you know what it is, I think I how could I put this, there's so many times, and I listen, I love what I do, obviously, but there's so many times when I'm on, you know, quote on, whether it's, you know, on television or in things where I have to be Kevin Burkhardt or out to dinners where I have to be, you know, like that person. And I don't have to be that in golf. I'm just a normal, you know, everyday hacker like everybody else. And I just throw a hat and a polo shirt on and I can go kind of have escapism for 4 hours. And I don't take it seriously. I mean, I take it seriously where I enjoy it and obsess over it, but I don't take it seriously where I go home because I, you know, bogeyed 18. I don't give a shit. I just enjoy the time out there. So It's a time to escape for me, and it's really become that. I love it.
Derek, are you at that level yet where you bogey 18, you don't give a shit, or are you still kind of
Yeah, because I'm no longer the director of golf, so as the general manager,
I'm the vowel.
Listen, I would like to birdie 18, right? But it doesn't, you know, exactly. I mean, if you give me a choice.
Well, and you know, the other thing, there's three things, and I love playing with KB for those exact reasons, is that he is who he says he is on the golf course, right? There's a group of people that are really understanding of what it is they do. And we've always talked about how much we want to make Rolling Hills into a social capacity, meaning I don't want it to be a stuffy club. It's never, ever going to be that way. And from my end, it's definitely that thought process. And when KB's there, it's a walk, and he loves my music. We play, we walk, we have a great time. It's never in a cart. It's never anything else. But more importantly, it's his getaway. It's what he talks about. It's who he is. And, you know, it's tough because we have a lot of them and we've all had them on this podcast, right? The one great thing, and I think that's the testament to what I'm trying to say, is that all of them have come on here. And like the time when Train was on and Nomar's on, EK's on and Sweens is on, you've got all of these guys that really enjoy each other. And I think one of the things I've learned through all of this is when they're in their own element, they're the best at what they do, right? Like, you know, Dontrell as well as I do, Parksy, is that he is full of shit 97% of the time. But the 3% of the time he's got to be amazing, he is, right? It's never a miss. KB hasn't missed in years because he is the best at what he does. But all of these guys take their lives very seriously. And one of the rewarding things about being a golf professional is I get to see the other side of that. I get to see the, hey, the tie's off, the collar's loose. We get to talk about that. Like one of the things I'm enamored with is just, I can't get enough of David Ortiz because when he was a Twin, he sucked. He was a horrible baseball player. And then he turned himself not only into an amazing player, but a bigger personality. And I can't fathom how much air he would take in a room because he's just that captivating, right? And when you ask Kev a question, it's the same as, hey, I made four, or hey, yeah, he's a great dude. It never changes. And I've really come to learn that when you're around great people, the emotion of their off time has no emotion, right? I love that. I love the fact that when he's on the golf course or that group of guys, like one of my favorite stories of all is when we played and it was Train and it was Kevin and it was Nomar, and Nomar was the nervous one, right? The guy with all of the awards and all of the accolades and forever known as one of the best. He was literally nervous with the three of us because of the way we kind of act, right? And so it's like, it blew my mind that that was a possibility. And to watch Kev get this kind of snicker and boom, we're right into the shit talking. And Nomar's like, when do we do this again? When do we play again? I want more of Train. And it's like, you see how they unwind. And I didn't realize, it's much like you and I do on this podcast. For me, it is actually serenity. I can be me. I don't have to have an actor. I don't have to take a complaint. I get to kind of do my own bullshit on my own terms. And I love that about thing. And I love to do with my friends. And it's such a wonderful way for me to watch how these guys at the best in the world, golf becomes the stress reliever. And I, who live in the game, didn't know that was possible. And now after kind of switching positions, and as we've talked about, it's a completely different thing. I'm not competitive. I'm not the way I used to be. And I've learned a lot of that from Kevin and Train and these guys that live that life. Like EK is another one, man. He's a different guy on the golf course. And I love that about those guys.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting because like, I think I'm probably not good enough to be like ultra competitive, but I'm competitive with myself on the golf course. Like, yeah, I mean, I joked, I'm not going to lose sleep if I get a bogey on 18. I'm competitive with myself because I want to play well, but it's a different level. I think D, like if I had your game, like, you know, and I, you know, was a little off, that probably would piss me off. Right? But I think considering like where I, like 2 years ago, I was, you know, shooting 100 all the time. So like the fact that I've made improvement and feel pretty good and like can hit the ball okay, like I'm good with that. And I got stresses from other places. So I try not to leave it there. I try not to bring it, you know, if I hit one into the rough on rolling hills, it is what it is.
You won't. Well, you also bring Logan, right? You know, like, exactly. But like he brings his son, and like it's become the whole thing it's supposed to be. And he's one of my favorite stories because that's what that club is there for, right? We are not like everything else. We don't want to be stuffy to repeat that again. We're not looking for that. I want people to walk in and be able to be who they are, how they act, and what they want from their club. And all of that should be attainable if we do the service right. And I think that's kind of the tie-in with golf, Parksy.
KB, where's the handicap these days? You were shooting 100 a couple of years ago. What kind of numbers are we posting now?
It's like an 11-ish.
Shit, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I feel usually, you know, I mean, I can't putt to save my life. If I could ever putt, I could actually be a good golfer. I can't, but usually, like, I hit the ball all right, and I enjoy it. You know, when I putt well, I have good scores. When I don't, it's a disaster. So I'm like, there's no in between. There's no middle ground, Parksy. I'm either, you know, putting really well and shooting low 80s, or horrendous and in the low 90s. Like, there's no.
I'll send you
no middle ground.
I'll send you the invite to the men's can't putt self help group. We meet on Monday nights.
Oh,
and by the way, Parksy, he was the ultimate win in a club fit. Went through a full club fit, head to toe. Yeah. And it changed everything. And he then understood what's possible. He's one of those, and I use him a lot when I fit, even till to the day. I use him a lot because it really was one of those great stories when we got the right equipment with the right bend and everything in it. Changed a lot, and you could actually really see how comfortable he became. So he's also a really big success story on using game-improving technology and the club fitting aspect.
Love
it's interesting, like, right, like it's, like, it's so cool, like that part of it's so cool about like finding like equipment that works for you and tailoring it to your swing. And I don't know, I find that part of the game so fascinating, how, you know, something that you use, Parksy, that I take a swing with, just doesn't work for me, or how the best driver supposedly on the market, I'll hit it and I hit it like shit. Like, I'm so enamored with that and like the process and the testing process and getting fitted. That's been a cool learning experience for me the last couple of years.
This next segment of the show is brought to you by our new friends over at Swannies. Swannies is here with a fresh take. Performance-based materials are a given these days. But if you're looking for the stretchiest, most lightweight pieces that can deliver a look that says, I'm here for a good time, take a walk on the Swanee side. With fabric sourced from recycled plastics and design sourced from our very own weekend warriors, Swanee's looking out for both the planet and those that need a little style boost. Premium looks from top to bottom at swanees.co. And if you use ForgeJack25, you can receive an extra 25% off your purchase at checkout. Enjoy. Swannies.com.
That's a really good segue. So finding your fit in life in general. Let's talk about KB's career progression. Let's talk about finding your fit, finding your feet in front of the camera. What was that whole sort of life cycle like, from starting finding a passion for sports and media and then sort of elevating all the way up to Super Bowl Kevin Burkhardt, as E-Train likes to say?
Yeah, you know, I always, I always loved sports as a kid, and I just wasn't very good playing them. And I always wanted to be involved. And so I always took a liking to announcers. Like, I listened to the radio a lot as a kid, to games, especially baseball in the summer. And we were a big sports household. Like, we loved football. We watched it nonstop. So I always paid attention to the nuance of that and announcing and what they did. And, you know, then as I became older, like, it's just something that I always wanted to do. So like in high school, grabbed a camera and went to the local game and tried to announce it. I announced video games with my brother and my friend, trying to hone my craft. And then in college, like, we went to a place that had a good program, like a real television program. And that's when I was like, I kind of thought that's what I wanted to do. And that's when it hit me, like, this is really what I want to do. I wanted to do, TV, sports broadcasting of some sort. So I guess I always kind of had the bug. I don't know exactly, when I thought it was real that I could really succeed. I just always wanted to do it. And, you know, I had people in my life, like my parents, who just like, well, then go for it. Right. A lot of people don't get that opportunity. So I just did. And I guess it worked out.
What sort of separates a good announcer from a bad announcer? Maybe in the early years, what kind of things did you pick out? And then what have you learned now that you really are conscious of when you're announcing or you're in front of the camera? Is there a way to speak? Is there a way to captivate an audience? Or is there special words you would use? Give us a little bit of the secret sauce.
Well, I think it's all subjective. I think that's the one thing about our industry, right? Is someone who may think I'm terrible and the next person may think I'm great. And there's nothing you can do to control that. So what you have to do is be confident and develop your style, you know? And that doesn't mean don't take critiques and things along the way and don't learn along the way and don't get better along the way. But the reality is, like, you know, I told myself this a long time ago, and I got a good advice from a lot of people that I knew. It's like, you got to find your own style and go with it. And if it doesn't work, well, then, you know, you go to the well and be like, okay, well, that's, you know, I went down swinging with what I've got. But if you're faking it, and, you know, you get to a point where it's not going to work anymore. Right. So you can't control people liking you and people liking your style, but I think you have to be confident. I think you have to develop a style, and I think you have to be you. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you'd be amazed at how many people that I've, you know, come across, or people that I've auditioned, or people that just, they don't know how to be themselves on camera, you know? So I'd like to think that the same person on camera is the same person you're talking to right now. Maybe I'm talking a little bit, you know, maybe I'm talking a little bit deeper on camera, or, you know, pushing my voice more on camera, but I think the personality and the person you see is me. And I don't think you could do it any other way. Otherwise you're just bullshitting everyone, including yourself.
Yeah, and I think at some capacity, and forgive my inexperience, but you're going to get found out eventually. And one thing that sort of, I don't know, is very similar between a lot of the guys that I've gotten to know through Derek, yourself, some of the athletes, there's this level of authentic self with these guys. I mean, there's a bit of a showy side, the athlete, the ego, but I mean, underneath all of that, it's just a real person that really cares about other people and is not out for that selfish endeavor. It's very selfless most of the time anyway, unless there's like, you know, some serious cash riding on the game. But overall, I find that a lot of these guys are just really, really down to earth, salt of the earth kind of guys. So that's pretty amazing. Let's transition a little bit here. Let's talk about, much like a lot of the guys you call in sport, getting that call up, elevating your game, having the opportunity to step up and sort of establish yourself on a different platform. What was that like?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess there's been different challenges like throughout, you know, the career that everyone faces the same thing, right? Doors get opened and you have to have a little luck on timing and then you have to go through them. So there's multiple people along the way have helped open doors for me. But then once they're open, you've got to prove it and you've got to do it, right? So I think it's just one thing where I've never been bothered by being in front of the camera or performing in front of people or whatever. I mean, you know, look, if you're bothered by it, you know, doing the Super Bowl in front of 115 million people is probably not the place for you, right? That's probably not the place to go. So it goes back, Parksy, to the same thing. I just, you know, and I guess I'll use the Super Bowl as a thing. Like, obviously that was a different deal. And, you know, first time I'd done it last year and it's a pretty exclusive club. And so, you know, everyone's, how are you going to do it? How are you going to handle it? I did it the same way I did every other game. Like, I prepped the same way. I worked my tail off and I went into it. Like, it's going to be, I obviously, of course, knew it wasn't every other game. I'm not an idiot, but I think if you go out of your comfort zone and try to make things different and try to do things differently than you've ever done. I mean, I do the football games for the NFL and Fox now the same way I did high school football games my first job out of college. Now I'm smarter about it and I know how to prep better and I'm better at my job now, but the same idea and the same way that I attacked it when I was doing high school games on the radio to nobody is truly the same way I do it now. It's just that I'm better at my job now. That's really what it comes down to.
Well, and I think also one of the things I love, like I grew up with Kevin Harlan, okay? And so excitable, right? So then after Kevin Harlan, everybody kind of went into that vein in Minnesota sports. Kevin moved on to Green Bay and then it kind of changed things, right? So then Gus Jones was also excitable, right? Basketball was fun. The problem I think that is going forward, and one of the reasons I'm such a KB fan is that I think when you get to that simple elegance, I think it's always the benchmark, right? And so now we're pushing the agenda. So perfect example is RG3, right? Like he's going over the line and he's going to get probably himself in a little bit of trouble. But more importantly, when you're the play-by-play guy and your analyst is putting you in a situation, you then have to kind of recoil back twice, right? You got to not be able to be bothered by what was said and what is done. And then everybody has this whole thing where it's now in your face and it's big. And now you're, you know, Colin and Trent Klatt and all these guys, they can make these bold statements. And then everybody forgets the next week when they completely are the converse to what they said the week before, because you don't have to apologize anymore, right? You get to say what you want. But when you truly get to the level where Kevin's at, you're talking about the highest pinnacle in baseball with three of the greatest players to ever play. Or you're talking about Greg Olson, then probably where we're talking, obviously, Tom Brady in the future. Like, you're thinking a lot about these guys. And KB, what is, like, when you're trying to be that calm in what is a great play-by-play, when you have unbelievable people that are analysts, how hard is it to transition in and out of that game in split seconds? Does that get to be something that, I know it's never, it's got to be intuitive, but does it ever get to be a point where it gets a little nerve-wracking kind of going in between two different people?
No, I mean, I think in a lot of ways I'm the point guard, right? So I'm just like dishing assists and it's also, I know timing and I also know like my partners, like what they like. I know their cadence. I know, you know, I kind of know like their behavior for the most part. And so like, there's times when, you know, I know like I got to grab it back and I have ways to kind of do it gently and I have ways to do it not so gently if I really have to, but it's really just giving them the space. Like I try to, again, like the point guard scenario, it's like, I want to give it to them and let them shoot the three. And it's just giving the space to allow them to do that and doing that, you know, it's funny, like doing play by play and then hosting the pre and post game show. It's, even though they're two completely different things, there are a lot of similarities between them. Like you're dealing with condensed time factors. You're dealing with, you know, bouncing off, instead of one analyst, it's multiple, but it's the same idea, how you're kind of pinging stuff back and forth and then moving on to the next thing. It really is one big conversation. The difference is that, you know, when I'm calling a game, there's play-by-play involved and calling plays involved. But really, like, I always think of it like you're just, you know, we're at the bar and we're having a drink and you're just, you know, there's millions of people along for the ride having it with you. That's my mindset on all this. It's always that same thing.
Well, that's awesome, because obviously, Parksy, we grew up in the north, and Kev's from New Jersey. But for us, hockey for me will always be the ultimate play-by-play sport, right? I just, the way that it moves, and obviously you and I have talked a lot about this, Kev, about a lot of the famous hockey announcers. But like, to me, hockey and football kind of have that same similarity, is that even when the play is not happening, it's what's developing behind it, what they're doing on the sidelines, what's coming in, different personnel, all of the things kind of constantly is this moving thing, right? And it amazes me that the calmness that people keep, and when you're good at something, right? And it's like, even now, and we're coming post Ryder Cup, right? Like, this is the first time I've seen really good people be out of their comfort zone at a point where they couldn't get it back in a sport that I work in, right? Mm-hmm. It was really shocking to me to watch the Ryder Cup and to know that the Americans just couldn't find it. There was obviously something that's going on, and there's a billion reports. Who knows what's right and what's wrong? Yeah. And we all know in sport, whatever they were talking about, it's been going on months prior to what the Ryder Cup was. And we know when they didn't let Netflix in, that should have been the first clue that something was way bigger than what we knew. But when you're doing that, so like, perfect example, you mentioned earlier in the podcast, when you're talking about that game, is it truly hard when it gets to that point where there is no contest and you've got to try and create things? Like, I think I do it every day in the golf business, because I have to try and keep 465 people happy, all with 465 different wants. But it's got to be somewhat challenging sometimes when the game's an absolute blowout or a contest is completely out of control. Like, it's got to be hard to fill, even at your level, doesn't it?
That's where you're in your money. Anybody can do, you know, 41 all with a minute left in the game. You earn your money when the game is brutal and you got to fill time for 2 hours and keep it interesting and keep your energy up and keep people watching the game. That's why you get paid. And you know, everyone's got a different formula for it. You know, I don't think you could lie to the audience. They're not dumb. They know the game is not very good. But, you know, a lot of these games, like, you know, you have to be careful, because there's also times I learned early in my career where, it feels like the game's over, but then all of a sudden the team's got it down a touchdown with like a minute left. And like, they're like, oh, I kind of killed this game 15 minutes ago and they've got a chance to tie the game. You know what I mean? So you have to be careful of killing a game necessarily the audience, because I've seen so many crazy things happen. Same time, you can't lie to them. Like, what's going on? Why is it going on? And then I think it's just conversation. Like, you know, look, there's always something interesting happening, whether it's conversation outside your game, whether it's a rookie is getting his first time and he has his first catch and what's his backstory. There's always something interesting to talk about. So you have to keep your energy up and you have to keep your passion flowing. That's the tough part, because it's easy to not do that. It's easy to sit down and throw your hands in the air and this game's not very good and move on. But that's where you earn your money, man. Like those games, that's... had a few of them this year too, D. Holy cow. We've had a couple of blowouts.
It's been just an odd season so far. And listen, I get it. I've got to sell sweaters to people that don't want to buy them. So I know what you're talking about.
By the way,
it's a hard gig in California.
So people know, like, if people know, we're not recording this at 10 in the morning. They're like, well, Burkhardt's drinking wine at like 9 a.m. So I hope people understand that. Sorry.
That's a green smoothie. We'll just edit that out. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I gotta say, we're gonna take it easy on you tonight. We're gonna let you off the hook here in a couple minutes, but I gotta ask, because I do see a little bit of the social media stuff. Is there a lot of antics that go on behind the scenes? Is there a lot of gamesmanship? Is there a lot of sneaky shit those guys do to you, or are they just pretty, you know, even keeled, keeping it professional all the time?
With who? Who do you mean, Parksy?
I'm talking about MLB on Fox, because I see all those guys are pouring vodka on each other's water bottles and stuff like that, and like, just there's all kinds of crazy shit that I'm sure we're not, you know, allowed to see, or they don't necessarily want to promote. But
you know what, we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun, and I think the beauty of that show with A-Rod and Big Poppy, and you know, we've got Jeter now with us, so this will be the first postseason with him, is that it's just, we don't plan a lot of stuff. Like, it's just, you know, we're like, hey, what do you want to talk about? Let's go here. And I know that, you know, he likes this, and we'll just see where it goes. And then we've got great producers who are so smart, and they come up with really fun stuff. They're pretty good to me, but listen, I'm an East Coast guy. I am a chop buster. So I have no problem getting my chops busted because I love to dish it too. I have zero problem with that being made fun of, being the butt of the joke. I am totally cool with it. So I welcome that stuff, but watching those guys and being around those guys is something else. I mean, we have fun and we laugh nonstop. Most of the stuff, which I can never say here or anywhere that's being recorded. But the cool thing is, like, I'm watching these games with these all-time players. Like, I'll give you an example. This is 2017. Yeah, 2017 was the Astros-Dodgers World Series. And so we're in the trailer. We're watching the game. And, you know, Big Poppy. And this is Yu Darvish. This is the second batter of the game. Big Poppy is like, they got his pitches. I'm like, it's the second batter of the game. And A-Rod's like, no, 100% they got him. And I'm like, show me how you know that. And so, you know, we rewind it and they show me, he's like, no way they take that. There is no way the bat doesn't move over his shoulders if they don't have his pitches. Well, guess what? They had his pitches, but they pointed it out literally 3 minutes into the game. So, like, I'm watching the game with these legends who see stuff, and it's so amazing. So, of course, I just put that in the back of my mind. And then when we do the show, that's obviously a big thing that we talk about. So that part is, almost wish you could record that and put that out to the public, watching the game with those guys. It is something else. I mean, they're so smart.
I mean, before Parksy, before you wrap up, I have one question because Kev said something. Okay. And I know we got to let him go, but you have the ultimate seat because nobody else can talk about this. East Coast versus West Coast fans. You live on one coast. Oh. You grew up on the other. Talk to me about the difference between the East and the West real quickly before Parksy wraps up.
Well, it's definitely different. And having lived in both, I would say the East, like especially the Northeast, right? Like I'm talking New York, Philly, Boston. It is live and breathe, die, cuss out. You know, you're talking, your day is miserable Monday if your team loses Sunday. It is miserable. That's your whole existence with your friends, with your coworkers. It's all you do. It doesn't matter how cold it is. Doesn't matter how drunk you are. You are going to the game. And that's how it was. When I was a kid, I went to a game in like 3 feet of snow in a blizzard. I don't even know how I got there, but I got there. And like, you just do it. And, you know, on the West Coast, like, I'm a West Coaster now for a decade, but it's like, yeah, you know what? Let's go for a boat ride. Let's go. Maybe we won't make all that ride to Dodger Stadium. And I get it. I've driven to Dodger Stadium. I understand. It's a tough ride, man. But, you know, it's like there's other things to do. Maybe it's not as passionate. It's a little different vibe. There's some more options here, maybe in December than there were back there, D, but.
Well, now I know why Mad Dog had to take a gummy. So it all makes sense.
There is a different level of like agita where you just get pissed for everything. And here it's like, it's okay.
So true.
Right? A well-deserved seat nonetheless. I mean, Kevin, you are absolutely world-class. Cannot thank you enough for making some time tonight. We know you're super, super busy. There's a lot going on in sport right now. So continued success. Good luck with everything, and we hope to see you on the golf course here in the next couple of months.
Fellas, enjoyed it. Great conversation. And like, you know, Parksy, you know, God forbid throw an invite out next time you're down here, you know, and maybe throw an invite out to go play golf. Jeez.
Absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt. We'll try and get out to
one. How about this? KB, you and I will just crush him and train. Let's just do this.
I am down.
There would be nothing better than you and I just shit-talking train for 18 holes. It wouldn't last 13.
Oh, it would be great. But listen, we can't give him any of those six-footers, though. Like the six-foot gimmies, those are going to go away if we're going to do that for real.
Yeah.
You're not wrong, because train makes Parksy look like a good putter.
He's the rake, the ultimate rake. He's got more rakes than a casino, this guy.
Now, listen, when I'm playing with him, he picks my ball up. I was like, I'll take that part. Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, really. 8 feet off the ground. Yeah, this one's good. Hey, it's a beauty. Anyway, yeah, love it. Love to get out and play some golf. You guys better start doing some push-ups because it's on like Donkey Kong.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks, Kevin. It's a – guys, I enjoyed it. Derek, you're the best. Really, let's do it again.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, KB. Have a great call, okay?
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Four Jack fan, we are super excited to announce for season six, we have partnered with Italian golf shoe designers, Duca del Cosma, and we're giving away a free pair of shoes for every episode. That's right, every episode, one lucky listener that DMs us is going to receive a pair of shoes. Baldovino Matiazzo's passionate innovations bring a much-needed sophistication and authenticity to the traditional golf world. These are handcrafted in Europe, superior craftsmanship combined with cutting-edge technology for the next generation of golfer wherever life takes them. On and off the course, get the best of both worlds. Stylish Italian golf shoes. These are amazing. Again, that's Duca del Cosma, Italian handcrafted golf shoes. DM us for your chance to win. Every new episode that drops, good luck.